You're locked into Transmission Roundhouse. Hello and welcome to Queer Ear. I'm Rory Boyle and you're listening to the Transmission Roundhouse podcast that leaves no stone unturned and no wig unsnatched by shining a light and sometimes throwing a little shade on issues that you don't always hear enough about in the mainstream media. Now, this podcast is all about spreading the queer agenda, so I want to begin this episode by acknowledging that while the Rupert Murdochs of the world have long controlled some of the false queer narratives that were often fed in both the tabloid and broadsheet press, we now thankfully have an abundance of social outlets that help us set the record straight. Well, not exactly straight, if you know what I mean, but they act as a tool for us to share our feelings on Drag Race, post our thirst traps, or simply let our freak flags fly, as well as, well, letting people know what the queer community are really all about. Social media is also a fantastic place for queer people to platform their work, especially given that there are countless publications and media sources that don't exactly always embrace our nearest and queerest in a warm and fuzzy way. Naming no names, the Red Tops are not our friend. But while social media might be considered the people's platform, it's recently come to my attention that more and more queer people are being silenced online. And an alarming number of those who are struggling to have their voices heard are artists, sex workers, and plus-size models. A disproportionate number of these individuals are also often people of colour. Now, I first read about all of this in an article for The Guardian by Shante Joseph in 2019. It pointed out that Instagram had a confusing policy of hiding certain content from its users, and since then, this issue just seems to have snowballed. Pussy Palace, which is a popular queer arts collective and London club night, has called out the photo sharing platform for shadow banning some of their content. Now, shadow banning refers to when images aren't outright removed from the platform, but they're instead strategically hidden from its users. So this strategy itself prevents users from searching shadow banned hashtags, and it removes the affected content itself from Instagram's explore page. Essentially, it makes this content a lot harder to find. Algorithms can have similar effects, as they are the tools that decide what we see whenever we open Instagram. And since these tools are being implemented 24/7 and Instagram's terms of service are being continuously updated and made more and more rigid and strict, I think it's fair to say that the queer community are being disproportionately affected. In fact, it's sex workers who are arguably suffering the most from shadow banning and algorithms. These tools have systematically prevented their work and their services from getting the same exposure as other online influencers. And of course, it's not just this content that's getting removed or hidden, it's also the fact that these sex workers or artists are sometimes getting removed altogether from social media. So why is it that these individuals are seemingly being punished simply because of their online existence?
The fight against sex work is so embroiled in criminalization, which of course, in previous decades, being a queer person was criminalized. There were heavy criminal associations with being publicly Black or a person of color operating in a public area with segregation in America. Today's fight is against sex workers. This is the current moral panic of the era. The entire country's eyes in America are focused on eliminating sex work, which we paint with a broad brush as sex trafficking. So we know that Black sex workers, they're more likely to be discriminated against. We know that they're more likely to be erased from social media. We know that trans and queer sex workers are more likely to be erased from social media. So in many ways, it is a culmination of all of these bigotries coming together. But particularly, I'd say that this is the hot button issue of the moment as far as criminalization of a social class goes.
You just heard the voice of Livia Roth, a sex worker whose Instagram and Twitter sequin micro bikini often calls out this hypocritical behavior and targeting of sex workers on social media. As Livia explained, sex workers, especially in the US, are often embroiled in a never-ending battle against criminalization. And she also pointed out that some of this intense online monitoring has come from a heavy presence of online sex trafficking. And while sex trafficking is clearly an extremely important issue, it is in no way the same as a sex worker actively choosing to use their socials as a promotional tool, and no sex worker should be routinely punished for this. We'll be hearing more from Livia in just a moment, and we'll also be hearing from Jack Hunter, a sex worker who has had two accounts deleted for allegedly breaking Instagram's terms of service, as well as Parisian artist JBG, who has had his queer hand-drawn portraits removed and shadow banned countless times on the world's biggest photo-sharing app. But first, back to Livia. I wanted to find out how the powers that be have managed to paint sex workers and sex trafficking victims with the same brush, which has ultimately led to a lot of these problems that members of the queer community are now constantly facing.
I think that the common misconception is that these people believe that no one in their right mind would want to do sex work, and that the only reason why someone would do sex work is if they have absolutely no other option or they're being forced to, which is where the conflation with sex trafficking comes in, because a person who is being trafficked is implicitly being done so against their will, against their consent, and people think that there's no possible way that sex workers would want to consent to doing this work.
If I open my Instagram right now and I swipe and have a quick browse, I'm going to come across influencers or everyday civilians who are posting, for lack of a better phrase, very thirsty pictures. And I'm also going to come across people who are advertising particular services, whether that be sex workshops, whether that be people with accounts that glorify particular body types or particular body parts. Now, if we park for a second how we feel about all of the above and whether we think any of that is problematic or not, it really does seem like it is somewhat celebrated on Instagram. There's a place for it. I see it all the time. So does it frustrate you, that hypocrisy? It must make you so angry.
It really does make me angry. I've called out numerous times pictures of celebrities that completely violate the terms of service. If I posted it, I would be removed immediately, but of course theirs is allowed to stay up. Famously, there was the debacle with Bella Thorne openly advertising her OnlyFans on Instagram, which is not allowed. Complete impunity. Nothing ever happened. I've seen influencers post photos that blatantly violate terms of service, had them removed, and then had them reinstated. It's extremely frustrating.
I can imagine. I mean, I want to talk about Instagram a bit more, but with Tumblr as well, I know Tumblr changed their terms of service a while ago and they got rid of a lot of adult content. That has to have affected sex workers who were posting on there. So can you talk about that whole process and how it affected people?
Tumblr was notorious for being a site that allowed lots of adult content. After FOSTA SESTA was passed, they completely changed their policy to not allow any nudity of any kind. The bots that they were using to flag the content were notoriously really bad. So everybody was being flagged, numerous accounts were being deleted. And what happened is that people left the site in mass, and Tumblr was sold to another company because it was no longer profitable for the company who owned it. So not only did it have a disastrous effect on sex workers, but it completely decimated the company's worth.
Well, speaking more generally about all of these different social platforms. Can you tell me about some of the problems that people face when they are censored or taken off them?
The first I would have to say is trauma. I mean, it is traumatizing to be systemically erased from view and ostracized online, especially this year when all of us are pretty reliant on the internet for social connection at all. But also, sex workers have been compiling resources to help each other for as long as the internet has existed at this point. And when we're no longer able to access them, people aren't able to access these lists of clients who are dangerous, who should be avoided. We can't access safety information. We can't learn. It's a complete breakdown of our ability to access information about our jobs, or especially living in an area like the US where this work is so criminalized that you may not always be able to connect in person with other people doing the same kind of sex work as you. It's really detrimental to be erased from online spaces because that's what so many of us rely on for connection, for safety purposes, for information. It's really devastating.
I want to step away from the fact that these social platforms are promotional tools for a second, but also look at them as the fact that they are a place to share this information. And if there is a particular venue that you're working for that is problematic at best, or a client that's abusive, that needs to be shared online. So if you can't do that, how are you reaching out to people who need that information?
Well, it gets a lot harder. Twitter is really our last social media platform that allows us to speak openly about our jobs and share information about our jobs. I think that's about it.
I've got to go back to Instagram because I want to read some of these terms out loud because I actually think they're just funny because they're so ridiculous. So they speak about contextually specific or commonly sexual emojis or emoji strings, regionalized sexualized slang. I mean, I'd love to hear them give an example of what that is. And mentions or depictions of sexual activities such as sexual roles, positions, fetish scenarios, state of arousal, act of sexual intercourse or activity, or imagery of real individuals with nudity covered by human parts. I mean, in simple terms, basically, if there's any sort of crazy kinky shit that we haven't thought of that you think might be a loophole, we are gonna find a way to get you to stop. I mean, going as far as policing emoji use, that is crazy.
It's definitely them trying to cover as many bases as they possibly can. Personally, I've never seen anyone advertise for a sexual service using only emojis. I'd be extremely impressed if someone could manage to do that. But especially since we know that these rules are being enforced completely arbitrarily, I mean, covering of human body parts with your hands, you'd be hard pressed to find an influencer who hasn't posted a photo like that. And especially that they specify that it can be a photo of a body part that isn't necessarily sexual in nature, but if the implication of the photo is a little bit sexual, then technically that would be breaking the rules. I mean, that would disqualify the entire fitness community as well. It's absolute nonsense to me. It's clearly not going to be enforced unilaterally, and it's just so that they can target any possible thing that a sex worker posts.
I guess I want to ask you where you think this is all going, because Twitter, like you said, is a safe haven and there's lots of OnlyFans accounts linked on Twitter, lots of sex workers who promote their services on there. Nothing wrong with any of that, but is there a danger that that might be the next target for censorship? Because I'm sure there are people who've been censored on Twitter as well.
Yeah, Twitter has targeted sex workers as well, not as strictly as Instagram has. It does terrify me to think about what will happen if we lose Twitter, because there really will be nowhere left for us to go. Facebook is currently embroiled in a lawsuit for monopolizing the social media market in America, so it'll be really interesting to see where that goes. If maybe they're forced to sell Instagram to another company, we might see some of these rules relaxed. I wouldn't rely on it or hold my breath, but the future most likely is that unless there is widespread outrage, unless there is some kind of a refusal to accept this kind of censorship any longer on a mass scale, we will see sex workers systemically erased from all social media.
Well, on the topic of sex workers being erased, my next guest unfortunately knows what it feels like to have this happen multiple times.
I had accumulated over 57,000 followers at that time. You know, it was part of my living at that point.
Jack Hunter is an adult performer based in LA who has had his Instagram removed not once, but twice. And as you just heard him say, the second time this happened, he'd built up a following of over 57K, which can take literal years to gain and is often impossible to replicate. Despite going as far as driving to Instagram HQ and pleading with the staff to have his account reinstated, Jack is now on his third account, where he has meticulously made sure that he does nothing to breach Instagram's terms. So is he fearful that being removed could happen again?
My fear more is in Twitter with the shadow banning. Often when I search someone who I might even be following, I have to be letter for letter specific on their name because Twitter has those algorithms to shadow ban people in the community or in the industry.
I want to play devil's advocate for a second. This is something I have to do where, you know, I think about it from Instagram's point of view, and they do have terms of service that I suppose they have to monitor people are following, because if they're not, we could see all kinds of things on there that I'm sure you and I both agree, even from an open-minded point of view, perhaps shouldn't be on the platform. But at the same time, it's become so apparent that there is so much targeting of queer artists and just queer people in general and the content they make. So can you speak to what's happening there and the sort of discrepancy between straight and queer content creators?
Yeah, absolutely. So there is a very big discrepancy against queer people. I even did so much as to research things. I definitely think that there are algorithms in place. I fear that it could get worse, and the explicit content that we've been allowed to post on Twitter so far may be eliminated.
So we've spoken a lot about the targeting of sex workers, but it's also been pointed out that shadow banning and censorship has spread across nearly every colour of the rainbow, with queer artists and those who are plus size often taking the brunt of this issue. And I think it's also important to point out that there are many shadow ban deniers who claim that this isn't a real problem, but my final guest has the exact opposite viewpoint.
The shadow ban is really interesting because to this day they still deny that it exists, but I can say based on my experience that it is real.
You just heard the voice of JBG, an artist who runs the House of JBG, an e-shop that sells portraits and other artwork that is a celebration of queerness, drag, LGBTQ issues, erotica, and the body in all its forms. So, like Livia and Jack, JBG has a strong online presence, but in what ways have these issues affected him as an artist rather than as a sex worker?
The whole point of Instagram is to grow a fan base, get exposure, get your work seen. So as soon as you start not showing that work, then the whole exercise becomes a bit pointless. If you're just shouting in the void and no one is seeing what you're doing, then, you know, it's counterproductive. The ultimate goal is to live off that, to get commissions. So you're literally denying the possibility of growth.
Well, you know, you bring up the algorithms there and you spoke about it quite eloquently there. But I know one thing that you did say on Twitter, which I loved, is that it's a mess of an algorithm. And you're definitely, you know, leaning into all of that. Can you talk about some of the voices and the bodies that have been silenced through this algorithm? Because of course it won't be just yourself. There'll be other artists that you know who've faced this issue. What sort of stuff are we not seeing on Instagram thanks to these algorithms?
A friend of mine who's quite famous here in Paris, and she's a DJ, she's a plus size, and her pictures would get taken down because the algorithm, like I said, apparently sees the amount of skin. And so on a larger person, we'll see like a lot of skin equals nudity, therefore there must be bits that aren't allowed to be shown. It got to the point when she was on the cover of a really famous magazine here, and she actually addressed that, and she addressed them directly in saying, oh, you know, I've been censored by Instagram. It's kind of sad to see that it has to get to the point of public shaming. The algorithm, and that's the thing, it's a scientific thing, it doesn't think, it just applies rules without taking into account variabilities like a human being would. You know, science or like technology can be impartial, but also that can be a bad thing. I, to my knowledge, cannot be constricted by something that just applies a scientific mathematical solution, because it doesn't apply to the living.
Well, it's interesting to look at it from that perspective, because the vast majority of the posts that we see from you are hand-drawn pieces. And it seems crazy that, you know, this mathematical or scientific approach that you speak of could mess with that art. So I think it's important to name that even though Instagram is largely seen as a photo sharing platform, it is hand drawings that you are sharing a lot of the time, and even they are being policed. So what does it feel like when that happens to you?
You just wonder why you keep going. When it's like a hand-drawn piece or even like a digital one and you've spent hours on it, there's always this little moment of like, oh, you publish it and you just can't wait to have people's feedback and see people enjoying it, liking it, commenting on it. And it's invalidating like years of studying, hours of practice, and all the time that you spend thinking and designing that piece, and then poof, you know, it gets taken away.
And going back to that point about, you know, maybe wanting to get commissions, obviously wanting your work to be seen, there's going to be some monetary value in that. Can you talk about how it can affect your work from a business point of view?
What I've found is it takes time to establish a relationship with an audience. People like to be in touch with you and talk to you. And the less people you're reaching, obviously, the less chances you have of getting commissions and people being interested in buying your work. It's really as simple as that. Sometimes you're like, wow, you know, I wish I could just take it to the next level and just have some growth, comparative growth, like it used to be. You know, my account used to grow a lot more than it does now.
Is this something that you think is going to change in a good way? Or is it a case that Instagram want queer artists off their platform and they are kind of on this mission to make that happen no matter what?
I don't think they set out willingly to do that, but that's the effect it has. I think the main objective is the same as it always was with social media platforms. Once they were invented, the real motivation behind it appears, which is to monetize it, make money out of it, sell. Basically, to have that, you need to have the biggest audience that you can. And so therefore, it brings you to, oh, this audience needs to not be antagonized or like offended when it goes on it, to make them want to shop. And that equals to removing certain content. So you see, it's like a complicated chain of events that brings us to that. I think they're playing a dangerous game, because the only example recently that I can think of like that was Tumblr. And, you know, people just wanted to clean it because they wanted to sell it. That completely backfired in their faces. What I would hope would be for another platform to emerge and appear. I don't know that's a possibility now, because, you know, it would take huge investments. I am following the user's rules. I'm not trying to get around it. I'm playing the game. You know, I've always on Instagram, I've always censored my work and I've always pixelated, because my goal is, as long as there's no real competition, I need to exist on it and I need to keep being visible on it. I think the key is just adapting. You know, if they change the rules, okay, we can adapt. But I think it's very important that there's not a massive exodus of queer artists from it, because we need to still be visible on there and still be there and still make our voices heard. Obviously following user guidelines, but we need to be there.
As we come to the end of this episode, I want to highlight two things that we have just heard JBG say. One was that he was quote unquote just playing the game in order to have his work seen. And the second was that we need to be visible. I think it goes without saying that when you're queer and you live in a heteronormative world, visibility is half the battle. So I'm sure that all my guests would agree that their online presence is not just needed, it's essential. We need to see queerness celebrated as much as possible, and one of the easiest ways to make this happen on a worldwide scale is through social media. On the point of playing the game, it seems that as a community, we're constantly having to jump through hoops to gain more representation, and these issues are just another clear example of this. I wish I could say that I see things changing, but I recently reached out to a trans woman named Reese Hodges who unexplainedly had several videos removed from TikTok, including one which challenged instances of queer bullying, despite the fact that they did not break TikTok's terms of service. Now, while this hasn't happened to Reese in a year and a half, the threat of censorship seems to be ever present. The ironic part is that we actually reached out to each other by DMing on Instagram, which is the app at the center of a lot of these issues. So despite the fact that this app is causing a lot of queer people a great deal of grief, it is actually what helped Reese and I connect. And if that doesn't show you just how complicated this issue is, I don't really know what will. All that's left to say is that I've been Rory Boyle, and thank you for getting it in gear, keeping it here, and listening to Queer Ear.
You're listening to Transmission Roundtable.